You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this episode on June 20th, 2016. My guest today is a developer, but is also an artist, Vance Feldman. How are you?
Doing good, Matt. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, thanks for being on the show. Now, we're going to get to some development stuff in a bit, but first, can you tell me about Foreverscape?
Well, the Foreverscape started as a doodle on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. This was 7 years ago. Now, I had reached the edge of the first panel of paper, and I decided to connect another. Before I knew it, I had about 20 pages, and at that point, I decided to turn the project into a website so others could track my progress. Now, good part of a decade later, the work is 3 football fields long from left to right, and it's about 18 stories tall when stacked vertically. And another confusing part is that it's periodic. The left side matches with the right side, so basically it repeats itself like the periodic table, allowing you to tile the whole thing infinitely. Kind of hurts the brain.
Yeah, I spent some time looking at the Foreverscape in a web browser. So first, just for the listeners, upfront disclaimer here, that the artwork isn't necessarily safe for work. You know, there's lots of different images in there, violence, some blood, nudity, potentially disturbing content. So you may not want to bring it up on your screen at the insurance office. But definitely should check it out. The best way I would describe it, just as a layman here in audio form, is that it has a real outsider art look to it, if that means anything. It kind of like saying, what kind of music do they play? Oh, indie music. But if you've ever seen artwork of somebody like Henry Darger, or you've watched an episode of Super Jail, it kind of looks like a combination of those two to me. I'm going to put some links to those in the show notes if you've not heard of that before. But how would you describe it?
Well, to start off, I'm a big fan of Super Jail. It's the ultimate parody of society. Without the critique of corporate culture or privatization of prisons or subversive psychedelic undertones, you know, the violence might as well just be another Tom and Jerry cartoon. I like it for its social commentary. Now, I'm not super familiar with the work of Henry Darger, but my art studio mate in college wrote on art and autism and touched on Darger. Now, I can see where you can draw the connection between his work and mine. At first glance, my work seems to have a sort of naive take on perspective. And for Darger, this is probably due to the lack of formal art training or choice, but for me, I'm kind of forced into it. The Foreverscape geometry can basically wrap around a column, except it's tilted like a spiral, so like a spiral staircase. So at every revolution, the edges meet. As you can see why this kind of complicates the drawing of a scene with perspective. There's no real logical way to do a grand scene with single-point perspective. Often I end up blending many two-point perspectives together. You know, it's more similar to like the perspective you might find in an ancient Chinese hand scroll. I can kind of see that naive look. He also has the subject matter of childlike drawn figures, and it may harken to the fact that I'm not really an illustrator, nor have I really studied the work of illustrators in my formal art training. I'd always been lured to opaque painting style and aesthetics, like oil paint. So really, I forced myself into a medium that I wasn't really comfortable with, and I guess it might give that outsider to illustration look.
Well, I don't mean that in a disparaging way at all. I really do admire that style. I find it very compelling. Just looking at Foreverscape I spent probably half an hour to an hour or so over the last couple weeks, and it's really quite easy to get lost in all the little bits of details or start tracing interesting paths through it, and it's just amazingly gigantic.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad you took the time to kind of explore that. I really see it as an exploration piece.
Absolutely. That's a very good way of describing it, because you are exploring as you draw, and we're also exploring as we look at it, in a way. Now, you had a successful Kickstarter recently to bring Foreverscape into a mobile app. And can you tell me about why you want to do that?
This was actually not as recent as I would like to admit, but finally finishing it up. Anyway, at that time, it was more recent that Flash had just died. It was a few years prior, and the original website was entirely Flash, and it worked out well because the early version of the website was just a kind of looked like a video player, and it would play the whole artwork from left to right. You could kind of just hit play and sit back and watch it go by.
Okay.
Anyway, so with the death of Flash, I had to ditch that, and it didn't make sense to maintain that anymore. So I did a quick redo in JavaScript, and I slapped something together, and the HTML site, it's pretty much what you see right now. It's not that easy to navigate. You just kind of scroll around, and you know, when you zoom, it opens up a new page, and it kind of takes you out of context. So given that I worked full-time, and I spent all my evenings on art, I didn't really have a lot of time to make a really robust way of seeing the Foreverscape. So really the only way possible to see it is in the digital medium, because the labor and the amount of space you need to lay out the whole work is just daunting. I mean, it never happens. It might never happen, at least until I'm dead. But that's how the idea of the app came. I needed a better way of sharing the art. And I also wanted a tool for myself to document and record my thoughts on various sections, which you know, is really hard to do. If I write a blog post, I say, oh, go look at page 598. It's a kind of a disconnect there. That was a couple years ago, right after the campaign concluded. My life changed suddenly. I had a family. I moved, changed jobs. It was a whirlwind. And I'd gotten pretty far in my previous attempt, but I got burned by some technological challenges I can talk about in a second. Sure. But, you know, thanks to the Kickstarter now, I'm in a position where I'm working part-time to push for the completion of the app. Not that I don't work late into the evening on it. And I'm proud of the features now with the app that's shaping up. I mean, I can talk about some of the main features. So one of the cool things is, as a user of the app, you can drop markers onto the artwork like it's Google Maps, and you can leave a comment there and then share that to Facebook, and it'll have a thumbnail image and all that. And you can click on that, and it'll take you back to that location in the app or, you know, to the dumbed-down version on the web.
You started out in Flash, and you've converted over to JavaScript. Now, you're a developer as your sort of day job, is that correct?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of everything, from C# to Node.js to MaxMSP, Jitter, Angular, TypeScript, V4. I've been doing software for about a decade now. My first foray into software was doing sound reactive animation. I did with a stage design company. I did some work for the Beastie Boys. I eventually ended up in the museum industry with a Portland company called Second Story Studios. With them, I did a bunch of stuff for museums. Kind of the coolest one is a 24-foot-long interactive media wall in the Library of Congress, and I think it might still be running to this day. I've done some low-level 3D physics engine work with Intel for some parallel processing demos. Lately, I've been doing a lot more straightforward web applications, like SaaS platforms doing analytics with D3 diagrams, mostly using TypeScript and frameworks like Angular, and building simple APIs with Node.js.
Wow, that's a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, kind of been all over the place. I get bored easily, I guess.
When you're creating this mobile app, you mentioned earlier some technical challenges. It sounds like you'd have some very unique technical challenges here. Can you tell me about that and sort of what tools are you using to develop the Foreverscape mobile app?
You know, a lot of people say, well, why don't you just use a game tiling engine? You know, there's dozens of those. Or, you know, a mapping application. And the challenge there is that they are all very grid-centric, and I kind of break the rules by being periodic, so my grid breaks after 5 and loops around there. So, you know, I figured I could either fight with customizing the engine or just build the engine myself. I decided that building the engine myself would make me more familiar with it. I could probably develop other features on top of it more easily. So given that, I started originally with Hax. I believe that's how people pronounce it, or H-A-X-E. Is how you would spell that. And that is a transpiler that transpiles to Android or to Objective-C for iOS. Now, with that, I had built out my engine, but I had really started hitting performance issues once I started doing Zoom and scrolling around, and I really had limited access to documentation on that. Not a lot of people were pushing Hax in that way. They were just using the kind of canned game engines, and all the discussions of optimization revolved around that. It was kind of sad. I had to ditch that effort entirely. So yeah, it was a big setback. I had actually, you know, set aside some time there, and because of that, I had to go back to work and had to couch the app for a little bit. So in my later research, you know, one of my criteria was that I needed a way to do both Android and iOS. I didn't want to disappoint half of my audience.
Okay.
But also, you know, I'm a sole developer, so I didn't have time to do a native app in both platforms. So I had to do a transpiler or some sort of cross-platform technology. So I chose Ionic because I'm really familiar with Angular, and Ionic basically wraps an Angular app using Cordova and allows you to compile for both Android and iOS. And what's really nice with Cordova lately is that both platforms now support native scrolling. So mm-hmm. when you have a big container with objects in it, it will scroll using hardware acceleration. So that was a huge gain. I wasn't expecting the buttery performance on iOS that I'm currently getting. The only problem there was that native scrolling does not support zooming. So I had to do this magical container wrapping where I'm also doing an HTML transform on the whole container so that the container actually gets bigger than the size of the window to zoom in on the detail, and then I swap out my tiles based on what resolution you're looking at. So I had to write my whole entire zoom engine on top of the native scroll engine. So yeah, that was some long nights there. But once the engine was done, now it's just a matter of flushing out the features and debugging. A lot of people used to critique Ionic and things like Cordova on performance, and I really don't see that as an issue anymore. I think the JavaScript engines there are performing quite well, and there's also technologies like TypeScript coming out that are, you know, basically wrappers of native APIs. So you get that good performance, and you get the advantage of not having to develop two completely separate applications.
So I'll put some links to Ionic and Cordova in the show notes so you can check those out if you're interested in learning more about those technologies.
I have a small backend for that. I use Azure Table Storage, which is just very similar to Blob Storage or storage in S3. And then I use Node.js with Azure Calls Functions app, function app. And so that's just basically endpoints that are Node.js entry points. And it allows me to have my entire backend hosted without a server, and it's charged per million requests. So I can basically get up and running with no monthly cost. So it's working really well for being an indie developer.
So that sounds like it's trending, the whole serverless thing. That's a buzzword I see a lot of these days.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, with a side project and having to maintain something on the side, you know, it's usually a bug creeps up on the weekend when you've had a few beers. You're like, oh, I don't want to fix this thing right now. Not having to go in and mess with Apache or noodling around with a MySQL installation on a Linux instance, you know, mm-hmm. it just removes a lot of headache. You can just fix the code bugs and not have to worry about uptime.
Sure. So that sounds like it's working great for Everscape.
Yeah, we'll see once the app goes live. But
when is the app going to go live?
So I'm planning on submitting it to the stores starting July 1st, and, you know, that could take a few rounds of review. You never know what could get rejected there. I'm working on one last feature, which is the ability to snap and take a picture and share that, or possibly even using this API called Lob, you could actually print out a postcard and mail it to someone. So I'm going to try to work on that in-app purchase. Maybe that'll be a feature update later if I can't squeeze it in. But yeah, mid-July is probably the release. I haven't set a concrete date just because software and who knows what could come up. But
yep, you're absolutely right.
Definitely by the end of July, it'll be out there. So sometime in July, it's coming out.
You've called this on your website, you said you've called this a lifelong project. So it's already very, very large. How big do you see it getting in total?
Well, so right now it's about 1,100 pages, and that's working on a very kind of part-time basis. So, you know, I can see it being 10,000 pages by the time I'm done with it, especially if I start doing it more full-time and doing less of the software thing. That's the ultimate goal anyway. There have definitely been some challenges with working on this for so long. It's like I never have the sensation of finishing anything. Typically, a painter might get tired of a painting and drop it for a few months and go work on something else. And I don't really feel like I've had that option, and it's really kind of driven me a little bit insane at times. So I'm actually on a six-month hiatus right now, mostly for sanity. It's the first break I've ever taken. I decided I wanted to prioritize getting the app done and just take a little mental break from it. I've kind of constrained my media, and I've just now started doing opaque painting with acrylic. And what I didn't want to bore myself by going right into my favorite medium first. And so now I feel like I'm just getting warmed up with my comfortable territory in terms of art. So I think this first 7 years are just the warm-up, basically.
Wow. Is there anything else you want to plug before we wrap up the show here? Anything besides foreverscape.com that I can put into the links, contact information, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram with @foreverscape, Twitter @foreverscape. I've also got a store on Etsy and some shirts up on Amazon. The next thing that is coming out very soon is an adult coloring book based on the early Farscape parts. I'm very excited about that. I just got the preview from the binder on that, so that will probably release in tandem with the app, so I'll have links to all that in the app too.
Great, and I'll add those links to the show notes as well. My guest today has been Vance Feldman. Thanks for being on the show.
Great, Matt. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time to look at the art and letting me share.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast is made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype and Audacity. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes.